The Voice of Thyumanuvar, The Silent Sage, Part 3. Where was Thyumanuvar? How did he escape the guards and the spies? Silent, aloof, meditative, Thyumanuvar had watched the play of the egoistic forces in the royal court since the sudden death of the king. Opportunists and sycophants thought the honest saint a stumbling block on their way to power. How can the blind know the sun? They knew that the queen loved him. They made her believe that Thyumanuvar was an impostor. Influential table bearers, wicked slanderers, double-tongued flatterers who won her favor poured gentle venom into her ears. Oh, queen, I sounded his heart today. It is flaming with passion for you. He closes his eyes just to adore your image installed in his soul. Meet him alone. He will fall at your feet. He is your slave. See that today. Thus, the cunning courtiers calumniated the saint and induced the queen. The saint knew the nature of the worldly. He hid not the dagger look of jealousy, the frown of insolence, and the nuisance of table bearers. With a calm self-gathered inner strength, he was prepared for the coming events. Daily, he made himself ready to leave the capital. He had two trusted disciples. Arulaya, the first disciple, had the gift of clairvoyance. Master, the table bearers are working out a plot that would cost you either your sainthood or your life. So, I am removing the family property to Vedaranyam. It is under the Maharatha king of Tanjore. These people cannot go there. The saint nodded his assent. Arulaya quietly removed all valuables to Vedaranyam along with a merchant. Everything was kept ready for the saint outside the fort. That particular night, the saint dressed himself as a Nayak soldier and escaped the watching eyes. The horse was ready. Arulaya was there to do everything. They quickly crossed the boundary of the kingdom, and then Thyumanuvar, in the robes of a wandering sannyasi, joined a party of monks bound for Rameswaram. In those days, the Maravas of Sivaganga and Ramnad raised the standard of national independence against alien powers that usurped the throne of Tamil Nadu. Even to the end of the 18th century, the brave Maravas fought for national freedom and gave shelter to political refugees. It so happened that the party which opposed Rani Meenakshi hatched its plot in the Marava territory from Sivaganga and Ramnad. So Thyumanuvar made haste to reach Ramnad, where he could live unmolested by the Rani's men. The king of Ramnad received the saint with due reverence and gave him a garden home for the practice of his yoga. Thyumanuvar went to Rameswaram and there dedicated thrilling psalms to the universal mother who saved him from the dangerous lust of the Rani. He still had to be guarded from spies and traitors. Thyumanuvar remembered the words of Sadashiva Brahmam, and he practiced both inner and outer silence. The mouth would not open for words, nor his mind for thoughts. At this juncture, 1743, he met again near Manamadurai the silent Brahman Sadashiva and received his blessings. The Brahman wrote a famous book called Atmavilas, which pleaded for perfect silence, solitude, and aloofness in utter renunciation. This book was explained to Thai Manohar. Thai Manohar wrote many poems in the light of Atmavilas. Sadashiva said in it, "Live not in the crowd of men, run away to solitude. Shun the lure of the opposite sex as if you were a eunuch. Treat sense pleasures as poison. Seek lonely places for self-reflection. Wander freely in the hall of God, sky-roofed." Thai Manohar steeped himself in meditation and in writing his spontaneous hymns, which Arulaya copied and gave to the world. Silence opened psychic centers, and meditation absorbed cosmic energy and awakened divine knowledge, so that the sage lived in tune with the self and wove his realizations into sublime verses. He scarcely saw people. The few that sought him were satisfied with hearing his hymns sung by Arulaya every evening. The garden where Thai Manohar lived is marked today by a small temple where his image is adored. There too an offer came to him from the royal court, but he refused it. "I have seen enough of this political and social drama. I have watched the world, and I prefer silence all the more. Silence is my book of knowledge," wrote the saint. He forgot the past in self-immersion. He opened his heart to divine love. He entered inner solitude, plunged into inner silence, and settled in the deeper self. He kept his self level, even like the ocean, which overflows not by the inflow of rivers, and which dries not by evaporation. In the meantime, the political turmoil in Madura and Thrissurapuram ended in a tragedy for the queen. Rivals joined the Nawab and brought about her downfall. Chanda Sahib ravaged her kingdom and imprisoned her. She drank poison and died. Thai Manohar saw the tragedy of selfish pride, greed, vanity, ambition, and treachery that made a hell of human life. He saw the fate of passion. He saw how rival forces endangered kingdoms. His way was now free from the queen's spies. Just at this time, his elder brother, Siva Chidambaram, came to Ramnad and persuaded him to return to Vedaranyam, where he could live conveniently and carry on his yoga. Thai Manohar started with Arulaya, visited Madura and other pilgrim centers on the way, and reached Vedaranyam. The village received its sage with temple honors. Thai Manohar entered his ancestral home. A bride awaited his arrival. His relatives entreated him to marry her and to show the world how one can be a yogin and a householder at the same time. That was the word of his master too. The brahmacharya life of Thai Manohar was so disciplined. He was physically and spiritually so strong that he could live in communion with God wherever he might be. So the saint married the chosen bride, the fair and chaste Mattuvar Kozhali, meaning lady of flowing fragrant tresses. Both lived together like life and body. They got a child who was named Kanakasabhabadi. After the birth of the child, Thai Manohar initiated his wife in yoga and meditation. Thai Manohar and his wife lived a life of purity and meditation. He read to her ancient books of wisdom. He dedicated song flowers to the divine every day and explained them to his companion in life. They lived a simple life and gave liberally to the needy. Thai Manohar, like his father, supervised the local temple. He made it thrill with the songs of saints and Vedic hymns. Unexpectedly, Thayumanavar's wife passed away, saying, "Lord, renounce the world after educating my boy and placing him well in life and not before. Let my soul rest in thee." The sage Thayumanavar was faithful to his duty as a father. He educated his son, placed him with his elder brother, and waited for the next command from his master. Thayumanavar was now soul-free. He kept himself aloof from home affairs. He gave away a part of his wealth to his son and another part to charitable endeavors and a third part to the temple, keeping for himself the wealth of divine grace. The time was ripe. The master came one day when he was meditating before the vast sea near Vedaranyam. Thayumanavar fell at his feet crying, "Master, by thy grace I am free to follow thee. Bless me with thy grace. Let me enter the high plane of superconscious trance. Let my being thrill with the nectar of immortality." The master graciously looked at the ripe soul and said, "You are now ripe to receive that yoga. My son, hear from me the ancient wisdom taught by Srimula and Satyadarsi and sing it to humanity." The words uttered by the master were woven into hymns and became the philosophy of the silent sage. The world of manifold appearances is the multiplicity of one divine energy. It is a play in five acts: creation, preservation, destruction, self-absorption, and salvation. The play is kept going by the cosmic force at the will of the witnessing Lord. God is all in all, all blissful, all containing, and impersonal. Grace is His personality. He is omnipotent, omnipresent. He is the life of lives, the thinker in the brain, the feeler in the heart, the seer in the eye, the hearer in the ear, the breather in the lungs, and the speaker in the tongue. He does everything through His grace and remains an unattached witness far beyond the world of modes and dualities. He is as He is, just as rays spread from the sun and give light and warmth to the world. Grace radiates from the divine and plays as the world. There is no language without the first vowel A. There is no world without God's grace. He is the unique one. There is nothing to be compared with Him. He has no birth, no death. His grace descends into purified souls. Such souls are lights that lead us Godward. Embodied creatures have the taint of egoism, lust, and delusion. They are tied to the results of good and bad acts. The mundane world emanates from the divine will and evolves from the lowest inertia to the highest superconsciousness according to the results of acts. The soul which is conscious of the divine grace enjoys peace, bliss, and freedom. The soul, identifying itself with the mental, vital, material body, suffers bondage and the pangs of birth and death. The mirror cannot reflect forms without light. The soul cannot act without grace. The soul, by the force of the grace behind it, rules as a king over the body. With the mind, intellect, emotive mind, and egoism as its ministers, waking, dream, deep sleep, trance, super trance are the five states of soul consciousness. In the superconscious trance, the soul feels its identity with the divine and attains divinity. The jiva then enjoys shivahood. The sun causes seasons, day and night, but it is quite separate from them. Even so, Atman is separate from the mind and its modifications. The soul must feel this and be conscious of its eternal unity with the divine. This conscious living in the divine is life divine. The divine grace transforms life into love and love into bliss. That grace descends in the form of consciousness. The ordinary physical eye cannot see the divine. The inner eye alone can subtly feel the divine presence in the soul. The mind, internalized and concentrated in meditation, with unflagging patience, forbearance, faith, and constancy, must the aspirant practice meditation. Purity of the heart and one-pointed fixity of the mind enables meditation. As the soul detaches itself from the mental modifications, it approaches the divine center. Then grace takes possession of the pure soul and reveals the divine presence. The soul must become red hot in the divine flame. Then it becomes shining gold and at last a crown of divinity. The first step is mental purification and concentrated devotion. The next is constant meditation and inner fixity. By this, the soul feels its at-one-ment with the divine, the quintessence of its being. Then it sees the same divine essence in the universe of beings. From self-consciousness, the soul widens into cosmic consciousness. Dear one, keep this in mind and renounce everything for the sake of divinity. Take a pearl diver's plunge into the heart. Be centered in there, and the divine light will lead you on. Go hence to Chidambaram. Meditate upon Lord Nataraja, the symbol of perfect divine truth. Worship him daily with hymns, and he will lead you on. Shivoham. The divine master then initiated the faithful disciple in superconscious trance, poured his energy into him, and watched his progress for a few days before he disappeared. Thai Manavar received the words of the Guru with all the sincere devotion of a true seeker, expressing his deep gratitude in sublime verses. Then he went to Chidambaram. To be continued.